All right, Alexander, let's discuss the terror attack on Crocus City Hall that that happened over the weekend. And over the weekend, we saw the four terrorists taken to court as well in Russia. Those videos are all over the internet. What are your thoughts, Alexander? A lot of discussion. Speculation. Putin gave an interesting 5-minute address. Many comments from the Russian leadership, Medvedev, Zakharova. What are your initial thoughts on this terrorist attack?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that it was an absolutely horrifying, indiscriminate attack on a venue, a purely civilian venue. Apparently a rock concert was being held there. There were hundreds, maybe thousands of people present, mainly obviously young people, people who are not involved in politics, not decision makers, completely civilian targets. And it was utterly, murderously, cruelly indiscriminate. And it was awful. It's one of the most horrible things. And of course, we had other attacks, terrorist attacks in the last 10, 15 years that, you know, are somewhat like that. But, you know, we shouldn't let the fact that there have been other terrorist attacks in other places take away from the utter horror and cruelty of what we saw happen on the 22nd of March in Moscow. So I have a number of observations to make. First of all, ISIS has come and claimed responsibility. And, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about whether ISIS was involved or not. I think the weight of the evidence now does strongly point to ISIS being involved. And I'm choosing my words carefully. We've had, firstly, their claim of responsibility on the Amaq news agency website. That's a news agency that ISIS runs, or is connected to ISIS. Then they posted a picture. Some people thought that might have been manipulated picture of the four attackers, you know, with a flag and all of that. But I think what has, for me, settled the issue about whether or not ISIS was involved is that they've also published a really horrifying video, an appalling video made during the attack by one of the attackers. So I think we can say that they were involved. But I'm also going to say this. I think, firstly, ISIS will not be happy with the way in which this whole attack played out in the end. Not because so many civilians were killed. ISIS likes and wants that. Terrible to say, but it's true. Everybody who knows anything about ISIS is familiar with this. But with what happened after, because there were six gunmen involved. Two of those gunmen were killed on the scene. The other four tried to run away. They were hunted down by the Russian security services. All four of them were captured. They've now been brought before a court. They look frightened and, if I have to say it, you know, bruised and battered. They do not come across like the kind of holy warriors dedicated to the cause, prepared for martyrdom, which is the image that ISIS wants to present to the world of the people who, you know, conduct their operations for it. So I think from that point of view, this has gone wrong. Now, I accept that ISIS operates with large groups of people. There's some people who are, you know, core members, others who are not. But you'd have thought with such a public attack, they would want to present an image of, as I said, these implacable holy warriors. And these four individuals do not look like that. They ran away. They were hunted down in a forest by police with dogs. It's a bad look. And it seems that they are talking, which again is not consistent with the image that ISIS wants to convey of the people who work for it. So that's one thing. Now, there is something else, and it really is very remarkable and very strange, and that is, why were these people trying to escape, and why were they trying to escape in the particular direction that they took? I don't think there's any real dispute any longer that they were actually caught in Bryansk region and that they were heading for Ukraine. How did they think they were going to cross the border into Ukraine? This is a border between two countries, Russia and Ukraine, which are, to all intents and purposes, in a state of war. So both sides will be controlling the border very carefully. There have been attempts at border incursions by the Ukrainians recently in another part of the border, in Belgorod and Kursk regions. The Russians, therefore, will be very alert in and around the border for any, you know, illicit movements, people trying to cross the border in some way. You would assume that the same was true of the Ukrainians. And yet, these people apparently thought that they could cross the border and escape into Ukraine. That's already strange. And then the other thing that I find very strange, and you know, extremely strange, are these statements that are coming out from Western officials, including the United States government, saying that Ukraine was not involved, saying that only ISIS was involved. How can they know that? I mean, you know, they're not parties, direct parties to the investigation. I mean, how are they so sure about who was involved and who was not involved? But beyond that, they seem to be going out of their way to refute an allegation of Ukrainian involvement, which I think it is important to make the point. The Russians officially, so far, have not yet made. Various Russian officials have spoken and hinted about this, about possible Ukrainian involvement. But the Russian state, so far, has not done so. We have, I mean, it may come, but the West, the United States in particular, seems to be attempting to preempt an allegation, which, as I said, so far the Russians haven't made.
Yeah, they're trying to get ahead of the, of what they believe is going to be an allegation that is going to be made. Obviously, everyone from Putin to Medvedev have, and the FSB have hinted at Ukrainian involvement. And then you get to the fact, and I think it's correct what you said. I haven't seen any evidence proving otherwise, but right now the evidence points to these four terrorists trying to get to the border with Ukraine. Why? I think that's the first question. And you know, if they're ISIS, if they are indeed ISIS or ISIS-K, it's not even ISIS, it's ISIS-K. If they're ISIS-K, why are they trying to escape to Ukraine? Why would that be the direction for them to go? And then I think you run into, you know, for me, this is the big problem with all of this, or the big confusion. What exactly is ISIS today, or ISIS-K? What does that even mean anymore? During Syria, during the conflict in Syria, when ISIS first, you know, made the scene, I remember covering Syria. I remember it very well. Everyone understood what ISIS was. It was this offshoot of Al-Qaeda, moderate rebels, if you want to call them that. Some people say moderate rebels. Some people say an offshoot of Al-Qaeda. But here was this group operating in the region with a goal of regime change of Assad and creating their own caliphate. I mean, everyone understood that that's what ISIS's goal was at that time. They were terrorists. They engaged in terrorist activity, but they were operating in Syria, in the region, during the conflict in Syria, and they almost achieved their goal, which was to take Damascus, raise that black flag, and remove Assad. Today, I hear the word ISIS and or ISIS-K for that matter, and I don't even know what does that even mean. I mean, who's their leadership structure? You had Baghdad, al-Baghdadi, I believe, back in the time of Syria. Who's their leadership structure now? Who are these people?
Yeah,
are they connected to Al Qaeda? I'm hearing Afghanistan. These guys operated in Afghanistan. Why Tajikistan? Why these four individuals? You have many reports of their fighters involved in the conflict in Ukraine, being recruited in the conflict in Ukraine. So I don't know. I've got a lot of question marks, as I'm sure many viewers do, about this group that the collective West media, as you pointed out, is telling us they are behind it, 100%. They are behind it. And the Russian government, they're hinting at some involvement in Ukraine, but they're not saying that it was ISIS or Ukraine officially. They're not saying it was ISIS, Ukraine, or anybody else. They're saying it's still under investigation. But within hours of the terrorist strike, Kirby was telling us it's ISIS-K.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think that's an important point, because everybody, all these governments are making these statements saying it was ISIS-K, are preempting the results of the investigation. And one would prefer to wait for an investigation, and then when one starts to get information from the investigators, then you can express your view. You might disagree. You might have information that contradicts what the investigators are saying. You're entitled to say it. But as I said, I do find the business of preempting what the investigators are going to say in an event of this kind, especially, massive terrorist attack, hundreds of people killed, a massive devastation done in a capital city. I mean, that you're rushing to point in one direction as opposed to another. To me, actually, that looks very defensive. I'm trying to preempt. Why preempt? Surely the best thing to do is to maintain a respectful silence, say that this is a terrible, awful, appalling tragedy, and let the commentators say whatever they want. But for the governments themselves, I think that the correct and proper thing at this time would have been to remain silent until finally we got, the announcement from the investigators as to who they thought was responsible. And given that we've now caught these four people, the Russians have caught these four people and have apparently arrested seven others, so it looks like the entire terrorist cell has been rounded up. We are probably going to get some kind of information from the investigators fairly soon. Just saying. Anyway, that is one. Now, coming to the question of what ISIS is, I completely agree. In fact, I think we both made similar points about this on our programs. Firstly, the original ISIS was a breakaway from Al-Qaeda. It then established itself as what distinguished it from Al-Qaeda was that it was supposed to be the caliphate. The new caliphate, with a new caliph who was al-Baghdadi, he proclaimed himself caliph, the leader of the Islamic world in the great mosque in Mosul. We all remember the pictures. And that was what it was supposed to be about. It was going to be the Islamic State that brought together all Muslims, that said that Muslim governments, all governments of Muslim states that did not acknowledge the caliph were somehow heretical and in rebellion against the true religious and political center of Islam, which is what they claimed to be. And that collapsed. That failed utterly. The caliphate was destroyed. Al-Baghdadi himself was killed. The whole thing imploded. The Russians rolled it up in Syria, along with the Syrian army. The Iraqis, with the help of the Americans, did the same in Iraq. The whole thing burst like, a bubble, though not before. It had done enormous devastation. Now, as far as I know, they do not claim to be the caliphate anymore. their leader, whoever he is, I don't know who their leader is, he does not claim to be the caliph of Islam. In fact, since he controls no territory, he can't be the caliph of Islam. So, given that this is so, what is it? There's been reports, I remember that they were circulating way back in 2021, that after the Taliban took over from the Americans in Afghanistan, there were reports that ISIS-K was operating in Afghanistan and was running some kind of insurgency against the Taliban. Well, we heard a little, quite a lot about that for a few weeks, that it all seemed to fade out. And from what I understand, this insurgency, to all intents and purposes, in Afghanistan does not exist. And we've also heard reports that there is some kind of organization operating in Central Asia, in Tajikistan and places like that. I haven't really seen much evidence for the existence of this organization. So what is it? I mean, is it a real entity? Is it just guns for hire? Just saying, because there's some talk that people were being paid for what they were doing. I mean, what exactly is it? What does it represent? What is its ideology? What is its purpose? Why do people take it seriously? And why does it conduct attacks like this? So I think there's a massive question mark over this organization. And until the point comes when this is explained to me, which it hasn't been up to this point, nobody seems to be addressing these sort of questions. Well, that makes me even more puzzled about what this whole operation was about. And coming back, as I said, to the way in which these four individuals behaved, the fact that they jumped into a white Renault car and sped for the border with the police and the security services in hot pursuit, and then threw away their weapons and drove apparently into a wood and ran across the wood and were, as I said, pursued by the armed police with dogs. Well, as I said, that isn't at all like the ISIS I remember. Either this organization has degraded dreadfully or there's something else going on. Just saying.
I agree with you. I think it's obvious that this ISIS or ISIS-K or this new ISIS, whatever this is, really doesn't have that much of a connection to what was happening in Syria during the height of ISIS's is power and exposure. Obviously, the two organizations don't seem to have much in common at all, except for the sharing of the name. And I don't even know why this name is attributed to this new group. I don't know. I just don't. Maybe there's a reason for it. Maybe I'm missing something. But if that's the case, then the questions come up. The way these four terrorists acted does not seem to be something that a group like Al Qaeda or ISIS would do in these types of terrorist acts. They weren't looking to martyr themselves. This didn't seem to be connected to any type of religious or ideological message. We do know that they got paid. I mean, I think that's now been, at least the FSB has told us that they were being offered 500,000 rubles and 1 million rubles if they were able to escape, which is not that much money, to $10,000, give or take. It leaves open the question mark, the thinking, why these four individuals, and if this isn't a type of a religious or ideological terrorist act aimed at punishing Russia for what happened in Syria. It doesn't seem like that's what this is about at all. Then what is this about, and what's behind all of this?
Well, indeed, many questions.
And in your mind, mind goes, and naturally, your mind goes to the conflict in Ukraine because
absolutely.
That's the direction towards where they were moving towards.
Absolutely, I mean, a heavily guarded border Whereas it perhaps ought to be pointed out that the border with Central Asia, which is enormous, Russia's border with the Central Asian states is huge, much bigger than its border with Ukraine. You don't have to look at a map to see that. It's much, much more permeable. I mean, it's not guarded to anything like the same extent because the Central Asian states and Russia are on good terms, and most of them are united with Russia in the Eurasian Economic Union and the Collective Security Treaty Organization, so that there is a wide degree of free movement and people are able to come from the Central Asian states into Russia to work as guest workers. And an awful lot of that goes on. So on the face of it, if these people wanted to escape, it would be more logical for them to head east rather than west towards what is probably at this moment in time the most heavily guarded border in the world. Just saying. So, I mean, there are lots of unanswered questions about this affair. We will get the answers. I mean, the Russians do have these people in detention, which is interesting in itself. They were able to capture, they've arrested seven others. I don't know if there's anybody, nobody, I think, seriously doubts that the four people the Russians have detained were in fact the perpetrators of this attack. So, you know, this case is going to be broken, I think, fairly quickly. And what the Russians will tell us, as I said, some people may decide that they don't believe it. And, you know, if so, they can say what they think. But I will be very interested to see what exactly it is that the Russians do say. And I think we will be able to draw a lot of conclusions from it. You're absolutely correct in one point. If we're talking about the situation in Russia today, everything, in my opinion, ultimately relates to the conflict in Ukraine. It is the overwhelming story relating to Russia and the fact that these people were heading towards Ukraine. It's a very indicative and important fact. Now, what it's going to tell us, we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, from what I understand, one of the terrorists actually was in the Ukraine military for a certain time as well. But we also got to remember that they have seven other people that we don't know anything about. So it'll be interesting to see who these other seven people in the cell, in this terrorist cell, are.
Before you go on, can I just say this is something else which I find really absolutely remarkable, because usually when ISIS or Al-Qaeda have carried out horrific terrorist attacks, it's taken a while before the authorities are able to roll up the entire cell and get to the bottom of what happened. This time it's happened at incredible speed, and I'm going to express a view. It seems that these four people came from Tajikistan, which is one of the former republics of the Soviet Union, but the place where, as I said, guest workers come. I'm going to make a guess that the Tajik community in Moscow, pretty much as soon as this happened, got in touch with the authorities and basically said, look, these people are the people you need to deal with, because we both go to Moscow. There's a large community from Tajikistan there. They will not want any trouble for themselves. They have good jobs. What they do is vital for Tajikistan's economy and indeed for their own families. So, this is probably one attack. It's going to be very difficult to carry it out again, because the Tajik and other Central Asian communities will be very alert to preventing this thing from happening another time and will be probably passing information to the Russian authorities very quickly. I just wanted to throw that in because I haven't seen that point made, but I'm confident that this is what has happened. Yeah.
It's an excellent point. And I think it once again, at least for me, it shows that this ISIS-K, outside of just sharing the name of ISIS, I just failed to see any connection to the ISIS. that I reported on and that I know. I don't understand what they have in common outside of just sharing this name.
Well, but, absolutely. I'm not an ISIS expert, so
I might be missing something.
The point about ISIS was it was the Islamic State, it was the Caliphate. Now that that has collapsed, I mean, at the very least, one would assume a total collapse in its credibility. So what would be the attraction for, you know, violent young men who want to be drawn into jihadi activity to go to something that has so completely failed and is so completely
Was this jihadi activity, though?
Well, that's
I mean, you
point,
said it, yeah. But was this attack jihadi activity? And you look at these guys as well. Can I make an observation as far as their physical appearance? These guys, they don't look like they're military men. Well, they don't look like they're special forces or trained soldiers in any capacity whatsoever.
Well, they
I mean, one guy was a hairdresser, from what I understand. Yeah. And I mean,
and they also look terrified. And they also look terrified. Which again, going back to what I said at the start of the program, is absolutely not the image that the original ISIS, perhaps I should have made that clear, would have wanted to present to Muslims and to the world. They wanted to present an image of fearless, implacable, holy warriors. These people look frightened men caught up in the enormity of some horror that they've perpetrated.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, we're going to have to discuss then what happens with Ukraine in all of this. Because while the Russian state has not officially accused anybody, any actor, anybody, any state, any entity, they have not officially accused anybody. They're still investigating. The hints are there that they're looking at Ukraine. This has got the collective West very worried. This has Zelensky terrified. He's acting tough, but you can tell in the videos that he put out, he is terrified. He's back in the bunker. That's how scared he is. I guess I'll give you two questions. Would it even be possible for Russia, given everything that has happened, given the way that I believe the Russians feel right now about this terrorist attack, will it even be possible if they find out this isn't connected to Ukraine, is it even possible for Russia not to take action against Ukraine, given where emotions are? And the second part of the question is, if the investigation shows that Ukraine played a role in this terror attack, and when I mean Ukraine, I could be talking about the Zelensky administration, I could be talking about Budanov and the intel services, I could be talking about a different actor. I don't know. But if they manage to tie this to Ukraine, what happens next?
Right. To answer your first question, I think the answer is that if the investigation does bring out evidence that Ukraine was not involved and that no one in Ukraine was involved, I think the Russians can actually stop, because they've been very, very careful, actually, not to make any formal claim up to Ukraine up to this point. If you listen carefully to what the various Russian officials say, and of course some have been a lot more explicit than others, but it's clear that at the back of their minds they think Ukraine or someone in Ukraine was involved. And I think the thing that makes them think that is the fact that these people were trying to escape towards the Ukrainian border. That is the big clue. And Putin said that in his address to the Russian people that a window was going to be open on the border to allow these people to cross. And that's a very suggestive phrase, and one wonders what he meant by it. And one also wonders what that window would have consisted of, given that, as I said, this is a very, very heavily guarded and protected border on both sides. But anyway, I'm not going to explore that. But I think the Russians think...
Can I just ask you a question about that real quick? Yes. When Putin made that statement, wouldn't have he run that through the FSB if he was going to say a window was going to be open? Can you assume that the FSB would have told them that according to their information, they believe a window was going to be open? So yes, you can mention that in your 5-minute address.
Well, can I just say something? If you go to Putin's address, at least the transcript of it that's been published on the Kremlin's website, Putin speaks of that as a fact, that the window was going to be opened on the border. He has clearly been briefed, and he's not saying that it looks likely that a window was going to be opened on the border. He simply says a window was going to be opened on the border. So it looks as if he has been briefed and he has been told this by the FSB. And that, as I said, does clearly point to some involvement by someone in Ukraine. And you're right to say that we don't yet know who it was. Could have been the government, it could have been the intelligence agencies, it could have been Budanov, it could have been some other rogue actor. There's any number of people in Ukraine. And, you know, we're not going to go and speculate about that. But if, despite all of that, despite all of the indicators that what the Russians are thinking, they nonetheless come to the view and decide that Ukraine was not involved, then absolutely they can stop, because they've been very careful up to this moment in time not to say straightforwardly Ukraine is implicated. So that is one. If they find out to their own satisfaction that Ukraine was involved, well, I mean, you know, the possibilities then become awesome and terrifying, because obviously Putin has already said that they will act to track down and punish everyone responsible. The Russian people will expect no less. A couple of days ago, Peskov was talking about Russia and Ukraine being in a state of war. He as I said, rode back on that comment somewhat. He said that isn't legally the case. Sending unarmed people across your border to carry out an attack of this kind is absolutely an act of war, by the way. If the Ukrainian state was involved, it would arguably justify a formal declaration of war, even if the Ukrainian state was not directly involved. The Russians could present Ukraine with an ultimatum, demand the surrender of all of those people who were involved, perhaps identifying who they were. If Ukraine failed to comply with that ultimatum, then again, you could actually find yourself at that point in a situation where the Russians feel that they are entitled to declare war. So, I mean, this is an awesome prospect. I have to say it's a real one.
Right. Let me follow up on that. The UK, I forgot who it was. I think it was Hunt of the UK, but he gave an interview to one of the channels, and he said not to believe anything that the Russians say. So whatever's coming out of Russia, he said, don't believe it. So what happens if the Russians do give this ultimatum, say they do manage to connect this terrorist activity to some entity, to someone in Ukraine, and they do give an ultimatum and they say, we want these people turned over to us, otherwise we're going to ramp things up. I would expect the US or the collective West to dispute whatever Russia says and to tell Ukraine, no, don't give in to any Russian demands. Don't believe anything the Russians say. We're telling you Ukraine was not involved. And I imagine that they're going to stick to that line. And what happens then? I imagine the rest of the world, the global majority, will probably believe Russia, which actually, when you think about it, does a lot of damage to the US's narrative of this conflict being unprovoked and there was no justification for Russia to go to war with Ukraine, to engage in the special military operation. I mean, that narrative falls apart if Russia manages to produce credible, indisputable evidence, facts that do point to to some sort of entity, some people in Ukraine with regards to this terrorist attack?
First of all, I agree. I mean, I think the first thing to say is whatever evidence the Russians produce, even if it is absolutely, concrete, indisputable, unchallengeable, that Ukraine was involved, the Western powers have already made it clear that they're going to reject it. I mean, they've already said Ukraine was not involved in any way. It is entirely ISIS's doing. So they've already said that. They're not going to row back on that. That is going to be their position. So, whatever happens, whatever the Russians find out, whatever the Russians say, the West is going to deny that it is true. Nonetheless, they are extremely nervous. Firstly, I think they probably deep down are nervous that someone in Ukraine might have been involved in some form. I mean, they know all about this business of, they're able to work out the same points that we have about how do you cross a border like this. And they know that the internal situation in Ukraine is such that you can never be completely sure that someone in Ukraine was not involved at some level. So I suspect there's nervousness about that already. Putting it aside, they are also aware of the completely disastrous military situation that Ukraine is in at the present time. And they know very well that if Russia now moves to a state of declared war against Ukraine and starts treating this as a war, there's really no stopping them. I mean, even as a special military operation, the Russians are now advancing on every front. Their missile attacks are becoming more and more powerful. Their air force is becoming more and more powerful. And they've got hundreds of thousands of men training and equipping on Russian territory. Some of them probably already trained and equipped and ready to take action. So this would be for the West the worst nightmare, because you would have an advance by the Russian army, much more purposeful, intense one than the one we've seen up to this point, more heavy bombing than we've seen up to this point, probably no territorial limit to how far it would go. And at a time when the West is not ready to do anything about it, and during an election year. So again, you could see why they're very nervous.
Yeah, during an election year, and you will have you could possibly have a narrative where there was you have a narrative that there was a terrorist attack committed against Russia, and you could have the narrative that this terrorist attack against Russia was done by various forces in Ukraine. These are all possibilities that could play out, and that's why the West is frightened about all of this, but.
As an indicator of how nervous some people are, there has already been an attempt, especially in Ukraine, to try and pretend that this was all a fake false flag operation. That has collapsed following the rest of these four suspects. These
did
four
more
people.
Damage.
Exactly. The pictures from the AMAC agency, and now, as I said, the arrest of these people. But that the very fact that that narrative was floated for a couple of hours already, again, is a sign of how nervous some people already are.
That was a very dumb move. A very dumb move on their part
dumb
to
move.
Come out with
exactly.
That.
Exactly.
Yeah, so my final question is, you have states within a state within a state in the United States. You have this in Ukraine as well. This is documented now that people like Budanov and his intel organizations, they operate many times without the knowledge of the CIA or the three-letter agencies in the U.S. or even the knowledge of the Zelensky regime. And you have all these different actors which operate in a rogue type of manner. Even the CIA, you could make the argument that the CIA operates many times without the president or definitely Biden knowing what they're doing. So you come back to some of the comments and statements that people like Nuland made about nasty surprises. Or a lot of people are talking about Milley and what he said back in 2020, 23, I believe, or 22, right before they were planning the counteroffensive, the spring counteroffensive, where he said that, you know, Russians should not be able to sleep, and we have to take this, you know, behind the enemy's lines. You know, could something like this be playing out as well, where you do have, you know, an intel organization in Ukraine that is acting without the knowledge of the central government, and maybe they're liaising with collective West intel organizations who are acting without the knowledge of the central government, or just in general, something like this going on? Because
I think on the first,
there's a lot of different players in all of this that are selling weapons, that are moving weapons, that are creating operations to strike into Russia or come up with these crazy plans to go after Putin or to go after, you know, people in Russian territory. I mean, all of this stuff has been playing out over 2 years. Maybe this is one of those operations or plans that they came up with, and there you have it. I don't know. My point is that we have had this dynamic over 2 years, and even the Washington Post and the New York Times has reported on this dynamic in the conflict.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the New York Times, because, of course, we have. I mean, let's start with Ukraine. I mean, there are absolutely people in Ukraine and agencies and entities in Ukraine that operate in a completely, law unto themselves.
Oligarchs.
All kinds of things. Oligarchs. I mean, the Azov people, all of those people. I mean, nobody fully controls them. I mean, I think this is the thing to say. I mean, you know, this is the Kraken group, all kinds of people of that kind could get up to all sorts of things. The structure of control is incredibly tenuous, and it's far from impossible that some of them could resort to all sorts of things. Bear in mind, we had that article in the New York Times about the CIA's involvement in Ukraine. And they were basically saying there that the Ukrainians basically did whatever they liked, and they carried out incredibly murderous and violent actions on Russian territory, on Donbass and in Crimea before the conflict began in 2022, that they were already doing it. Budanov himself was involved. So, you know, we have that culture. And, you know, I'm not, by the way, again, I want to stress, I'm not actually saying that any one of these agencies was involved. But I can plausibly believe, I can imagine that they could have been involved. I mean, I'm not saying. Now, about Western intelligence agencies, here I have to say this. I think at a formal level, I think it is incredibly unlikely, all but inconceivable, that a Western intelligence agency would be involved in something like this. I think that this kind of operation, this kind of terrorist act in Moscow, the consequences, if it were to come out that they were involved, would be so extreme that it would be very, very dangerous for them. But what they tend to do is they get involved with all kinds of strange people, using careful words now. We saw that in the Middle East. We saw that in Syria. They provide arms, equipment, training. They know what these people are like. They knew that in Afghanistan back in the 1980s. They know what these people can do. And, well, they look the other way. At least they appear to. It could be that some people at some level within those agencies are familiar with what's going on. But basically, they give a loaded gun to these people and say, you know, go off, do whatever you like. It's for yours to use now. And that's more how they work, or at least so it seems to me. In other words, what I'm saying is they wouldn't be directly involved in planning or preparing something like this. But they probably wouldn't be completely surprised if some of the people they've been involved in actually did that. And, you know, they'd be aware in advance, at least to some extent, that these people are capable of doing things like this.
Yeah. All right. Very dangerous. A horrific incident.
Well,
a very dangerous situation that we're now heading towards.
Well, if I may say so, I mean, here we come back to an underlying problem because, of course, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, all of these entities and movements, they are, and I've long believed this, they are a product of the covert, I'm not even going to call them intelligence wars, the sort of covert wars that have been fought and which the neocons are so enthralled by. And they always throw up people like this who are incredibly difficult to control. Covert activities, it seems to me, are a disaster altogether, and they ought to be stopped. And we're going to have things, problems of this kind continuing for as long as they continue.
You know what else needs to be stopped? The final thought is all the stupid comments, the reckless comments that collective West leaders and the media make.
Absolutely.
Nasty surprises, and he's a dictator and a thug, and we need to regime change him and remove him, and we're going to give Russia a bloody nose, and we need to strike behind the lines. You see, all of these comments and statements that they make, they're now being talked about again in the context of this terrorist attack. And I'm not saying there was any involvement there. I'm just, my point is that, all of these people in such high positions should refrain from making these types of statements. Even if you think it, even if you believe it, don't make these type of statements because you don't know what's going to happen in a year or two.
You are absolutely correct. Can I just make an observation here? I mean, the wartime allies didn't talk about the German leadership in that way during the Second World War. I mean, this is a world war, a war for survival. And even then, Churchill and Roosevelt didn't talk, and their officials didn't talk about the German leaders using this kind of language. This is terrible, stupid language to use. It's infantile language. I mean, it's the sort of thing you expect from teenagers, not from leaders. And as you rightly say, it coarsens the entire international atmosphere, and it makes all kinds of things possible which should not be possible.
Yeah, agreed. All right, we will end it there. TheDuran.locals.com. We are on Rumble, Odyssey, BitChute, Telegram, and Rockfin. Take care.